from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's Overtime on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham will take you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, as I mentioned, as we take a big picture look at the National Football League, we're joined by Super Bowl winning offensive tackle Ryan Harris, formerly of the Denver Broncos. Talk all things NFL with him coming up here in about a half hour or so. We'll take a spin around the college football landscape as well as our pal Barrett Salih is set to join the program. Now, right now, want to continue what we have been doing over the past several nights here on Overtime, our Washington Commanders position preview series as we get geared up for NFL training camp. Commanders set to report in Ashburn for day one of camp. Rookies, vets, all expected to be there 1 week from today. As they start this thing off, and as we continue to move through our position preview series, we started off with O-line, D-line on Monday. Yesterday, we did defensive backs and wide receivers. Today, I want to do linebackers and running backs. Linebackers and running backs here in Washington, the position group that I think is probably going to have the biggest impact on this team this year, potentially, is the running back room, and here's why. Or excuse me, is the linebacker room, and here's why. I don't know how we're going to look at that group, but I know Frankie Louvu is a highly touted off-ball linebacker. I know Jamin Davis has showed flashes, and I know the rookie from this past year, Jordan McGee, has turned a lot of heads during the offseason. We got a couple of guys in the mix for the job. I just wonder, to be a damn good football team. Seriously. If they exceed expectations, this could be a damn good football team. I really do feel that way. With Bobby Wagner, future Hall of Famer, coming over. Yeah, it's a little bit long in the tooth, but I still think, you know, that he's got plenty left in the tank. When I mention linebackers, though, I kind of am cheating. Because I want to talk about Frankie Louvu and Jamin Davis, two guys that I don't know how much linebacker they're going to ultimately play, especially Jamin Davis, who it feels like is going to be exclusively a pass rusher in the final year of his deal. I think that group, after being neglected for so many years by Ron Rivera and company, I think this linebacker group finally is in the position and finally has the opportunity to be an impactful piece of this football team. They do. They do. The question to me, you to ask, is one, are the linebackers listed at linebacker the only guys that are going to play linebacker? I know that was a lot, mouthful. Meaning, Bobby Wagner listed as a linebacker. Frankie Louvu listed as a linebacker. Jamin Davis, we don't know how he's going to be listed. Jordan McGee listed as a linebacker. And those, some of those nickel and dime personnel groupings, a guy like rookie seventh rounder Dom Hampton, I think, can be good enough to play that dime linebacker for Washington. I look at Derek Forrest having the ability to do that. So when I look at the linebacker group, I do think that is a unit that finally is going to be able to bounce back. No more Cody Barton, no more Spicy Mayo. I mean, we actually have legit bona fide guys in there at the linebacker group, and I'll be honest, it is refreshing and feels a hell of a lot different. It does. Feels a hell of a lot different. Now, if they can't provide pass rush juice, talking about Louvu and Jamin Davis. Neither of those two guys great in coverage. You wonder, does Jamin Davis figure it out as an edge rusher? And if he doesn't, do you cut bait with him? Is Dan Quinn and company, this staff that did not draft him, one, how loyal are they to him? And two, how much do they covet his skill set? Jamin is what I like to call a run and hit style linebacker. Don't need him thinking too much. Don't need him worried about what zone area he's going to check. Run and hit. That is what Jamin Davis does best to me at the linebacker spot. Run and hit. Run and hit, run and hit, run and hit, run and hit. Jordan McGee, as I mentioned, Washington's mid-round pick out of Temple. There was a photo the Commander's social media team put up where the guy that just finished working out, I guess, he looks like the most physically imposing presence on that defense. In terms of height, how he's cut in the body, I mean, he's got it. He's got it. And I think learning under Bobby Wagner is going to be instrumental for him. I wonder how quickly he's able to progress along during training camp and whether or not he puts himself in position to have a major role on this football team next year. Gotta wonder. I remember we interviewed him right after draft day, myself and Chris Russell, and he was ecstatic to be a member of Washington. He's got that personality. He's got that mindset to where nothing's been given to him. Everything has had to be earned. He just wants to go prove himself. I'm on board with it. I want to see him prove himself as well. I do. We've talked enough about the linebackers here. I think that group is going to be good. I think a linebacker ends up leading the team in tackles, whether it's Bobby Wagner or Jordan McGee. But I want to look at the running back room here. Yeah, running back room. I'm fascinated by this position group. To me, this Commander's running back room offensive line is the most important position group on the Washington Commanders this year, and here's why. I've been saying it all offseason long. Put it on a t-shirt. Exotic smash mouth football. If Washington cannot run the football consistently, then I expect Jayden Daniels to struggle. If they are able to establish a running game, I think they're going to exceed people's expectations and be way better than the general public thought they could be. There's no middle ground with that. There isn't. It's either one way or another. But the names involved that we expect to get a lion's share of the carries is Austin Ekeler and Brian Robinson. Austin Ekeler, obviously, we know his track record. One of the who's who at the running back position over the past several years. He suffered injury last year and wasn't able to participate and produce the way that he would have liked. Chargers cut bait with him, and he ends up here in Washington. I think he's honestly going to go down as the most underrated signing of free agency, because I think they're going to use Austin Ekeler till the wheels fall off as a pass catcher, as a runner, and pass pro, you name it. Austin Ekeler is going to have a role on this football team, and he should be happy about it. He should. What I'm curious to see is how this coaching staff strikes the balance of keeping Brian Robinson healthy and happy. How do you split the carries between B-Rob and Austin Ekeler? Or do you let him straight up compete and say, hey, look, we're only going to feature one back. You, the other back only plays due to injury or fatigue. Is that how they're going to move? I don't know. But I continue to feel like, man, if they can't run the football, this is all for nothing. See, the one thing that we keep saying is with Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator, with Brian Johnson coming in as the pass game coordinator, knowing the background offensively of those two dudes, people expect them to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. I simply don't think that's true. And if that is the case, then that must mean Jayden Daniels is not off to a fast start. And that ain't good. That ain't good. That ain't good at all. As important as this offensive line is, I think their ability to run the football is even more important. And it's not just Eckler and Robinson. The designed QB run game, I think, is going to be a part of this. And I know when we had Jory Epstein on a couple of weeks ago, she spoke about how, yeah, they're going to make a conscious effort not to run Jayden Daniels in between the tackles. Good. I'm waiting on it. I'm good. That's good. Can't wait to see it. Sleeper that's in this running back room that isn't really talked about a lot. I got Chris Rodriguez, C-Rod. I got to admit, C-Rod grew on me last year. I didn't understand the draft pick initially when they first selected him. But watching him in his sparing action, watching him play sparingly last year, how is him and B-Rob going to split carries, though? This is why I think they can get creative and throw people off in terms of their personnel groupings. You can line Austin Eckler up in the slot on the outside and still have B-Rob as your lead back in the backfield. Exotic smash mouth football is how I expect it to look. It ain't going to be pretty. It ain't going to be cute. It ain't going to be sexy. It's going to be effective, though. And hopefully that running attack combined with the defense will allow Washington to be playing meaningful football late in December and early in January. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, the Commanders defensive tackle group, the Commanders defensive line group, rather, long considered a strength of this football team. Can you say the same about that group as we head into next year? That's next on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It is overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the youngest in charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Coming up here momentarily, we'll talk a little bit of college football as our pal Barrett Salih is set to join the program. Coming up here momentarily, I wanted to talk, and I know we did this position group on Monday where we did defensive line and offensive line. I want to add another layer to the conversation when it comes to the defensive front right now in Washington. Think about it like this. This time last year with Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Payne, Allen, Phil Mathis, I think there was a consensus that this Commanders defensive line was the best position group on the team heading into training camp. Would you say that now? Think about it. Would you call the Commanders defensive line the best position group on this football team? I don't think you can. Ironically enough, I don't think you can. To me, though, last year's worst position group on the team was linebacker. Maybe they're flip-flopping. I would say that this year's linebacking core probably the best position group on the team is it at linebacker? I think it's going to be a steep competition between linebacker and safety. I love this safety group that Washington's put together. Some guys that are going to double as linebacker. I keep talking about Dom Hampton, 6'3", 220 out of the University of Washington. Somebody that I think is going to have an impact right away in those sub-packages. Like Derek Forrest is going to have a big impact in some of these sub-packages. They got between Hampton, Forrest, Quan Martin, Jeremy Chinn, Jeremy Reeves. They got five legit safety. Percy Butler. They got six legit safeties on this team. Do all six of them make it? I don't know. I think it's going to come down to how they view Quan Martin. Do they think he's a guy that has legitimate ability to play in the slot at slot corner? If so, then yeah, you keep him around. But I just don't know, man. This defensive line, and they put out, ESPN put out their top 10 D-line rankings last week. John Allen and Daron Payne, both honorable mention. How was the one question I was asking about Payne is, was his breakout year just because he was in a contract year or because he finally figured out how to finish quote-unquote at the quarterback? That's what matters. Finishing at the quarterback. If you're a D lineman, just generating pressures is cool as well, but impacting the quarterback first and foremost. And it feels like this group as a whole, without having seen them in person in pads, lacks the star power necessary, I think, to have success. If they can't generate a pass rush next year, if they can't impact teams and get to the quarterback in those third and six-plus situations, you got to find new talent, bro. They're not buying in. It's just what it is. As we sit here a week out from the start of training camp, though, offensive front, John Allen, Daron Payne, we assume Dorrance Armstrong plays one of the edge rusher spots because of the big money contract he signed. And then, who plays opposite of him? That's where I think it gets interesting. Between a couple of different guys. KJ Henry, last year's fifth rounder out of Clemson. You can go with Dante Fowler Jr., who they brought over in free agency. Andre Jones, seventh round pick from last year. There's a bunch of different guys that can get it done, but we know Frankie Louvu and Jamin Davis are going to be playing some significant snaps at that position as well. So, I think, yeah. This position group, talking about D-line, not the best on the team anymore because I think we're just getting, we're seeing a change here with linebacker becoming a strength for this unit. I think D-line's still a strength, but a group that I think has question marks. But I look at the coaching on the defensive front. Sharif Floyd, Daryl Tapp, you name them. Like, they got former players littered across the staff. Coach Kerrigan, and they got juice in that D-line room. And watching them practice during mandatory minicamp, you said, oh, I get why, you know, this group is badass. I get why, you know, this group ultimately is going to be able to impact the quarterback, in my opinion. They bring the juice. Sometimes the energy, the juice, that's all that really matters. That's all you really need. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well as at N-E-L-L underscore BTP, do you think the Commanders, or what is the best Commanders position group as we get geared up for the first day of training camp? 1-800-636-1067. John Allen and Daron Payne are obviously the straw that stirs the drink for this defensive front. In the event that something happens to them during the season, I feel a lot more confident about letting them get fully rested because I know I've got John Ridgeway. Because I know I've got Big Johnny Newton. I know I've got Phil Mathis. Those guys got to rotate. They got to play more. Daron Payne and John Allen played way too many snaps last year. And honestly, I think, fair or not, that it dipped into their production. Just my conspiracy theory on the whole thing. They weren't as fresh. It's what matters. Right? It's what matters. The reason I have optimism for that group and for those two in particular is I'm excited to see how Dan Quinn and company scheme up pressure for John Allen, for Daron Payne, what type of games they're able to play up front. Like, that to me is going to be massive. That to me is going to do a big, big part in telling the story. At the end of the day, though, if you can say what you want about Washington's secondary, We talked about them at nauseam yesterday. If this D-line doesn't eat, that secondary is not going to have a chance. They're not. They're simply not. One unsung name on that D-line that I'm, like, curious and I'm happy about his return is F.A. Obada. I think F.A. Obada, coming off the injury, is in a position where he is healthy and ready to rock. What I loved about F.A. Obada last year was the inside-outside pass rush versatility. I think that still exists. I don't know where he's going to be from an explosion standpoint when it comes to the injury that he suffered. But at the end of the day, man, this group and this defense is going to be defined by whether or not that D-line can cause havoc and get to the quarterback. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Last year at this time, the D-line clearly considered the best position group on the Washington Commanders. What do you think is the best position group for the Burgundy and Gold as we sit 1 week out from the start of training camp? Let's go to Marcus in D.C. What's going on, Marcus?
You're speaking my mind, man. I just, like, we depended on the defensive line so much last year, and then, I mean, we were decent, and this year it just seemed like those guys were gassed out. I would love to see us be able to get a decent rotation on, like you said, and I'm excited to see. I'm just expecting more.
Is there a name on this defensive line that you think is going to raise some eyebrows that maybe no one's expecting?
Oh, not that no one's expecting, but I'm just crossing my fingers for Newton. I mean, it's just, yeah. We got him like a, I don't know, for like a glass of water or something. He came out of nowhere, so it's just like I'm loving what this guy can do. I'm just concerned about the injuries a little bit, but I'm just excited for seeing that guy.
Yeah, for sure. One guy that I think maybe is going to shock some folks, Marcus, D.C. cat, local cat, Virginia cat, called him a D.C. cat. He's from Virginia. Cleveland Farrell, mm-hmm. Former number two overall pick, hasn't lived up to that billing yet, but he's turned himself into a damn good edge setter with the San Francisco 49ers.
I mean, San Francisco 49ers, we could do a lot.
Yeah.
We could do a lot of learning from that, but we started our GM thing, right? So, I mean, we're kind of digging into that. I hope so.
There's familiarity there, Marcus. I appreciate the call. As always, 1-800-636-1067 is the number. When you look at this Commanders defensive line, last year, this time of year, they were the clear-cut best position group on the team. Do you still think they are that? And if they're not, who do you, which position group do you think it is? 1-800-636-1067. When we come back, talk a little bit of college football, as we're about 39 days away from week zero of the college football season when our pal Barrett Salih set to join us next there on Overtime. Georgia Tech, Florida State in a high-stakes ACC matchup out in Dublin to start the college football season as it is going to be an absolutely big-time year. We've been talking big-time storylines. We've been talking about Coach Prime in Colorado, whether or not they're going to be able to bounce back in year number two. What can we expect out of Jalen Milroe now that he's been paired up with Kalen DeBoer? A lot of big-time storylines going on in college football. Joining us right now to talk all things college football is our pal Barrett Salih, who covers college football for CBSSports.com. You can check his work out there. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Barrett Salih. Barrett, what's going on, my brother? How you feeling?
I'm good. Just got to Dallas about 4 hours ago, doing well.
You are live out on location from SEC Media Day in Dallas in terms of what you are expecting out of this year's SEC? Is it Georgia and everyone else, or do you think someone can challenge them this year potentially for that SEC title?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Georgia and everybody else, although that everybody else does include Texas, which yeah. I think is closer to Georgia than it is whoever you want to put at number three or number four or number five or whatever. So, I think for Georgia, it's all about trying to figure out how you replace Brock Bowers and you replace Ladd McConkey. And they've got dudes. I mean, this is the type of Georgia team that is, you know, very similar to the Nick Saban teams at Alabama in their heyday, where you literally just like recreate the same player over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, one leaves and like it's a clone. It just pops back up. So, but you want to see how that works. You want to see how Oscar Delp does at tight end. You want to see if they replace Ladd McConkey with another star or use some combination of Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas, and some other folks. So, yes, it is George and everybody else, but everybody else does include a Texas team that I think is more steak than sizzle.
As we look at this Georgia team a little bit closer, when you look at the young man under center in Carson Beck, do you think he is the best quarterback in college football right now? And if you do think that, do you think there's a sizable gap between him and the next best quarterback in the country?
I would say it's Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback in college football right now. I certainly think that it's you could make an argument both ways, for sure. But the step back behind those two is massive. I mean, you look at the Heisman Trophy odds right now, and Dylan Gabriel is in that group. And I'm like, Dylan Gabriel, yeah. Like, what are we even doing here? Come on.
I'll say this about Gabriel though, real quick, Barrett, based off of what you saw last year with Bo Nix, you don't think he's got the opportunity to potentially, you know, replicate those numbers and then throw in some more rushing yards as well?
Nah, not really. He's a good quarterback, but he's not Bo Nix by any stretch of the imagination. I think for Carson, he's so underrated. He sort of got tabbed as a game manager for the first half of last season, and then suddenly everyone realized, sure, Wow, this guy's actually really good. But Quinn, to me, he's got way more upside in terms of what he can do on a game-to-game basis. And I think right now you just have to – like the dude's led them to a college football playoff and was, one 15-yard pass away from actually beating Washington. And I think they would have beaten Michigan in the national championship game. So, you're talking about $50 steaks, right? You're not going to go wrong whichever one you order at the steakhouse. I think Quinn's a little bit better.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, how that plays out for them with their first year in this conference. Another one of college football's blue bloods here over the past decade or so is Ryan Day and company at Ohio State. And is it a question right now, Barrett, where it's now or never right now for this Buckeyes team?
I wouldn't say now or never because
I mean, they're always going to be able to recruit, but I'm saying in terms of the talent they have.
Well, for this team, like, this is the most talented team Ryan Day's had. I don't think even more so than the one 2 years ago with C.J. Stroud. I think the quarterback position is the only place they are they have a little bit of an issue. I don't buy Will Howard. I think that the fact that he lost his job at Kansas State to Avery Johnson is something that is not being talked about enough. However, the pieces around him are just insane. So this is definitely – I wouldn't say it's do or die, but – for Ryan Day, it's definitely playoff or bust, because you can't sit here and say that the program's going in the right direction if you don't make a 12-team playoff. Just you can't do that. Should it be Final Four or bust? Yeah, probably. And it's definitely beat Michigan. It's just a fascinating season because theoretically Ohio State can go to the college football playoff, and everybody in all Ohio State fans are still upset. because if they don't win the first round and lose to Michigan, then what's the point of the entire season, you know?
What is it all for? Exactly.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned a lack of confidence in Will Howard. What do you think are the chances that we could potentially see this star-studded freshman, Julian Sand, come in and play it all this year? I got to call some of his brother's games out at Penn. I do color commentary for Georgetown football, and we got to see his brother up close in person. It runs in the bloodline. A lot of folks within the college football water cooler, around the college football water cooler, feel like this kid maybe gets a chance to play next year. What say you?
He better.
Yeah.
Because it ain't going to be Will Howard. They're not going to be able to win a national championship with Will Howard. So Julian
really?
Saying,
wow.
Like, look, Nick Saban loved him, absolutely loved him. That's why he committed to Alabama. So I think for Ryan Day, Julian should play. You know, whether it's Devin too. I mean, look, I think anything other than Will Howard will get Ohio State into a position where they can win a national championship.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I know the way I feel about them is like, do they need to have elite QB play to win a national title? Because this roster's star-studded. As you mentioned, it's the best team that they've had under Ryan Day. So if they can get production from the quarterback position, I think a lot of folks across the country will feel real confident about their ability to take it all. One team that I feel like maybe isn't getting enough shine, or one quarterback that I think isn't getting enough shine. I was a big Riley Leonard fan. What are you expecting from him next year at Notre Dame?
Assuming he's healthy, I expect him to be a star. I think I love what he was able to do in an offense that is very unique at Wake Forest. I think when you put him in a situation at Notre Dame where he's going to be much better protected, he's got more weapons, and he's going to be in a position where he doesn't have to do an awful lot because the defense is going to be so good. I think he's set up for stardom, for superstardom. If you didn't know about him before, you're going to know about him now. But that's assuming he's healthy. And look, I hate to put that disclaimer on everybody. You can put it on everybody, but you really have to put it on him because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. So I think I think he can be a superstar. We have to see it on that level. I think he can do it. I think he's that good.
Yeah, I know a lot of folks across the country eager to see what him and that Notre Dame team looks like come the fall. Out in Happy Valley, man, James Franklin, it feels like just hasn't been able to break through all the way with Penn State. 5 double-digit win seasons, 5 top 15 finishes. But Penn State has never been higher than 7 in that final AP poll. Do you think this is the year that they break through and not only get into that college football playoff, Barrett, but even win a game?
I don't. I think they'll be on the on that sort of edge. And, I mean, obviously you have to – if you're sort of flirting with the back end of the playoff, a lot of what your postseason future is based on is luck, I mean, and landscape. It's kind of hard to say one way or the other. But I think for James Franklin, that is not a team that can win it. They can get in, but they can't win it. And that's a conversation that I think we have to sort of focus on moving forward in this new era, is that there are going to be a lot of teams that can get in, but very few can win it. If you have a quarterback in Drew Aller, you're not good enough to win it. You can have a great rushing attack, but you have to have a difference maker, and he's just not a difference maker.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they replace the pass rushing expertise of Chop Robinson on the edge. I know they got a couple of guys in the mix there that they're going to be relying on to get after the quarterback. It's so funny, man, because it feels like I'm a DMV guy, so I do my local radio in Washington, D.C. All we talk about here locally is how James Franklin and company constantly come down the road and pluck all of our talent that Coach Locks can't get. And it's been frustrating to see that Penn State group not be able to get over the top. I want to ask you, though, about a team that I feel like it is sort of in a position now where they can get back to being who they were. Clemson is interesting to me. I feel like in this year's ACC, they've got a legit shot to reclaim their spot at the top. When you look at the 2024 Tigers, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think for Clemson, it's all about what happens in that front seven.
Georgia Tech, Florida State in a high-stakes ACC matchup out in Dublin to start the college football season, as it is going to be an absolutely big-time year. We've been talking big-time storylines. We've been talking about Coach Prime in Colorado, whether or not they're going to be able to bounce back in year number two. What can we expect out of Jalen Milroe now that he's been paired up with Kalen DeBoer? A lot of big-time storylines going on in college football. Joining us right now to talk all things college football is our pal Barrett Salee, who covers college football for CBSSports.com. You can check his work out there. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Barrett Salee. Barrett, what's going on, my brother? How you feeling?
I'm good. Just got to Dallas about 4 hours ago. Yeah. And, doing well.
You are live out on location from SEC Media Day in Dallas. In terms of what you are expecting out of this year's SEC, is it Georgia and everyone else, or do you think someone can challenge them this year potentially for that SEC title?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Georgia and everybody else, although that everybody else does include Texas, which yeah. I think is closer to Georgia than it is whoever you want to put at number three or number four, or number five or whatever. So, I think for Georgia, it's all about trying to figure out how you replace Brock Bowers and you replace Ladd McConkey. And they've got dudes. I mean, this is the type of Georgia team that is, you know, very similar to the Nick Saban teams at Alabama in their heyday, where you literally just like recreate the same player over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, one leaves and like it's a clone. It just pops back up. So, but you want to see how that works. You want to see how Oscar Delp does at tight end. You want to see if they replace Ladd McConkey with another star or use some combination of Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas, and some other folks. So, yes, it is George and everybody else, but everybody else does include a Texas team that I think is more steak than sizzle.
As we look at this Georgia team a little bit closer, when you look at the young man under center in Carson Beck, do you think he is the best quarterback in college football right now? And if you do think that, do you think there's a sizable gap between him and the next best quarterback in the country?
I would say it's Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback in college football right now. I certainly think that it's you could make an argument both ways, for sure. But the step back behind those two is massive. I mean, you look at the Heisman Trophy odds right now, and Dylan Gabriel is in that group. And I'm like, Dylan Gabriel, like, what are we even doing here? Come on.
I'll say this about Gabriel, though, real quick, Barrett. Based off of what you saw last year with Bo Nix, you don't think he's got the opportunity to potentially, you know, replicate those numbers and then throw in some more rushing yards as well?
No, not really. He's a good quarterback, but he's not.
Yeah.
He's not Bo Nix by any stretch of the imagination. I think for Carson, he's so underrated. He sort of got tabbed as a game manager for the first half of last season, and then suddenly everyone realized, sure, Wow, this guy's actually really good. But Quinn, to me, he's got way more upside in terms of what he can do on a game-to-game basis. And I think right now you just have to – like the dude's led them to a college football playoff and was, what, one 15-yard pass away from actually beating Washington. And I think they would have beaten Michigan in the national championship game. So, you're talking about $50 steaks, right? You're not going to go wrong whichever one you order at the steakhouse. I think Quinn's a little bit better.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, how that plays out for them with their first year in this conference. Another one of college football's blue bloods here over the past decade or so is Ryan Day and company at Ohio State. And is it a question right now, Barrett, where it's now or never
right now for this Buckeyes team?
I wouldn't say now or never, because
I mean, they're always going to be able to recruit, but I'm saying in terms of the talent they have.
Well, for this team, like, this is the most talented team Ryan Day has had. I don't think even more so than the one 2 years ago with C.J. Stroud. I think the quarterback position is the only place they are they have a little bit of an issue. I don't buy Will Howard. I think that the fact that he lost his job at Kansas State to Avery Johnson is something that is not being talked about enough. However, the pieces around him are just insane. So this is definitely, I wouldn't say it's do or die, but for Ryan Day, it's definitely playoff or bust, because you can't sit here and say that the program's going in the right direction if you don't make a 12-team playoff. Just you can't do that.
Well,
could
exactly.
Should it be Final Four or bust? Yeah, probably. And it's definitely beat Michigan. But yeah, I mean, it's just a fascinating season because theoretically, Ohio State can go to the college football playoff, and everybody in all Ohio State fans are still upset. Because if they don't win the first round and lose to Michigan, then what's the point of the entire season, you know?
What is it all for? Exactly.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned a lack of confidence in Will Howard. What do you think are the chances that we could potentially see this star-studded freshman, Julian Sand, come in and play it all this year? I got to call some of his brother's games out at Penn. I do color commentary for Georgetown football, and we got to see his brother up close in person. It runs in the bloodline. A lot of folks within the college football water cooler, around the college football water cooler, feel like this kid maybe gets a chance to play next year. What say you?
He better.
Yeah.
'Cause it ain't going to be Will Howard. They're not going to be able to win a national championship with Will Howard. So Julian
really?
Saying,
wow.
Like, look, Nick Saban loved him, absolutely loved him. That's why he committed to Alabama. You know, so I think for Ryan Day, Julian should play. You know, whether it's Devin too. I mean, look, I think anything other than Will Howard will get Ohio State into a position where they can win a national championship.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. I know the way I feel about them is like, do they need to have elite QB play to win a national title? Because this roster's star-studded. As you mentioned, it's the best team that they've had under Ryan Day. So if they can get production from the quarterback position, I think a lot of folks across the country will feel real confident about their ability to take it all. One team that I feel like maybe isn't getting enough shine, or what quarterback that I think isn't getting enough shine. I was a big Riley Leonard fan. What are you expecting from him next year at Notre Dame?
Assuming he's healthy, I expect him to be a star. I think I love what he was able to do in an offense that is very unique at Wake Forest. I think when you put him in a situation at Notre Dame where he's going to be much better protected, he's got more weapons, and he's going to be in a position where he doesn't have to do an awful lot because the defense is going to be so good. I think he's set up for stardom, for superstardom. If you didn't know about him before, you're going to know about him now. But that's assuming he's healthy. And look, I hate to put that disclaimer on everybody. You can put it on everybody, but you really have to put it on him because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. So I think I think he can be a superstar. We have to see it on that level. I think he can do it. I think he's that good.
Yeah, I know a lot of folks across the country eager to see what him and that Notre Dame team looks like come the fall. Out in Happy Valley, man, James Franklin, it feels like just hasn't been able to break through all the way with Penn State. 5 double-digit win seasons, 5 top 15 finishes. But Penn State has never been higher than 7 in that final AP poll. Do you think this is the year that they break through and not only get into that college football playoff, Barrett, but even win a game?
I don't. I think they'll be on that sort of edge. And I mean, obviously you have to, if you're sort of flirting with the back end of the playoff, a lot of what your postseason future is based on is luck. I mean, and landscape. It's kind of hard to say one way or the other, but I think for James Franklin, that is not a team that can win it. They can get in, but they can't win it. And that's a conversation that I think we have to sort of focus on moving forward in this new era, is that there's going to be a lot of teams that can get in, but very few can win it. If you have a quarterback in Drew Aller, you're not good enough to win it. You can have a great rushing attack, but you have to have a difference maker, and he's just not a difference maker.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they replace the pass rushing expertise of Chop Robinson on the edge. I know they got a couple of guys in the mix there that they're going to be relying on to get after the quarterback. It's so funny, man, because it feels like I'm a DMV guy, so I do my local radio in Washington, D.C. All we talk about here locally is how James Franklin and company constantly come down the road and pluck all of our talent that Coach Locks can't get. And it's been frustrating to see that Penn State group not be able to get over the top. I want to ask you, though, about a team that I feel like it is sort of in a position now where they can get back to being who they were. Clemson is interesting to me. I feel like in this year's ACC, they've got a legit shot to reclaim their spot at the top. When you look at the 2024 Tigers, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think for Clemson, it's all about what happens in that front seven. I mean, they have a good defense. They really do. But you have to sort of figure out, okay, can they? What it's more like, what are you asking them to do, right?
Right. What are the expectations? Yeah.
Yeah, because I think for Clemson, there's still this thought that Cade Klubnik can be a star at quarterback, and maybe he can. But you know, if he's not, then you're going to put a lot of pressure on that front seven.
It feels like forever since he's come in and replaced DJ, right?
Yeah, and I think Phil Moffitt is a good running back. I think he's actually much better than just a good running back. I think he's elite. If Cade doesn't stretch the field deep, and this is their problem last year when they stumbled to a 9-win season. That's the floor for Clemson now, is 9 wins. Think about that. Yeah. But you know, he's just, if Cade Klubnik is just a little bit better, it's going to go a long way for that team. I think he can do it. That might determine, like we talked about, is Clemson a team that can get there? Is Clemson a team that can win it? If Cade can just stretch the field a little bit, then I think they're in good shape.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. We're joined right now on the guest hotline by our guy Barrett Salee, who covers college football for CBSSports.com. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Barrett Salee. Barrett, I want to ask you about the quarterback position in college. We had 6 first-rounders in this past year's draft. Is there a guy that you have on your mind that may not be getting a lot of love now as a potential first-rounder come next April, but you think by the end of the season he will be in that conversation?
All right, do you want me to go deep or do you want me to go really deep?
Give me what you got, Barrett. Lay it on.
I think Connor Wegman at Texas A&M is one to keep an eye on if he stays healthy. I think he can be a superstar, and staying healthy is something that's really, really been hard for him. But I do think he's got that in him. And if I'm going to go super deep, I'm going to go Brock Vandegrift at Kentucky. I think that kid, after coming from Georgia, learning under that system at Georgia for a couple seasons, learning from Carson Beck last season, he can go in that offense and become an absolute star. He's fast. He doesn't use his legs as a crutch. But he's more than a willing runner. And that kid can throw the ball out of the building, but also has a changeup. So he hasn't taken a meaningful snap yet. So if you want me to go real, real deep, that's who I'm going with.
You heard it here first. Barrett Salee all over it. I want to ask you about Deion in Colorado, man. It feels like they were the most talked about story in all of the country last year. They fizzled out, obviously, and they finished with a record of 4-8. I think Deion's got a special ability to galvanize a program and to get guys to follow his lead. They didn't have a whole lot of talent last year. They had a pretty good offseason in terms of what they were able to do in the portal, plus their recruiting class. Do you think they can go from 4 wins to maybe 7 or 8 coming up this year?
Not 7 or 8. Bowl game would be a massive improvement. I think with Deion last year, it became, after the first 3 games, the people who don't watch college football just kind of were like, oh my God, Colorado's going to win the national championship. Then they went 4-8, which, I mean, honestly, 4-8 is a massive improvement for that.
Right, for sure.
So, you know, I think the expectations have been recalibrated, which is good. And I think so you know, for Deion, just getting to a bowl game is massive. So I think 6-6 is probably where they need to be. Can they get there? That's a very difficult question because we don't know if they can block. All they really have to do is be mediocre, and I think they can, and not horrific, because last year they were horrific.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because when we just mentioned some of the first-round quarterbacks that could be coming out this year, I look at what Shador was able to do last year, as you mentioned, behind one of the worst offensive lines in the country. I believe he was like the second most sacked quarterback, yet he was still able to perform at the level that he did. What do you think about his projection to the pro level? And if you had like a potential comp that you were looking for with Shador Sanders, who would it be?
I don't want to dodge the question, but how do we know what Shador can be?
That's true, because he hasn't been put in ideal circumstances yet. Yeah,
I think that he is, you know, part of the problem with him last year was that he held the ball too long.
Yes.
Not a ton, not way too long, but too long.
Yeah.
And is that something that's a byproduct of his offensive line being horrific, or is it something with him, or is it both? You know, it's kind of hard to say. The idea that he's a first-round draft pick right now is insane. Could he play his way into one? I think maybe. But right now, I've seen him as like the best or second best NFL draft prospect at quarterback. To me, it's like, why? You haven't even seen who he is yet, you know. Until you see that, it's hard to trust him. It's also hard to criticize him.
Well, yeah. So is your knock on him mostly from, you know, holding the grenade in his hand too long? Is that really what the biggest issue is with him right now? Because I think he's got the arm talent. He's got the ability to throw the fastball, to take some off of it. I look at like Geno Smith. That's kind of how I view Shador Sanders.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see that. Because
longer
Geno,
release. Yeah.
Yeah, Geno at West Virginia was kind of in that same mode. And honestly, he won the September Heisman one time at West Virginia, just like Shador did. I think that's a good comp. I think for Shador, it can change quickly, though.
For sure.
And I think it's not, to me, again, it's like not really fair to judge him one way or the other. Right. And I know, especially with Colorado, everyone's supposed to have like the hottest of hot takes. and that's, you know, it's not really fair for Shador to do that. Because, I mean,
right.
You know, like I said, when he has an offensive line, who is he?
Right.
Nobody
exactly.
knows.
Will the ball come out on time? I think that's one of the big questions that evaluators are going to have with him. His teammate, Travis Hunter, gaining a lot of fans last year for his play at Colorado. I thought it was, you know, heroic, some of the stuff he did on both sides of the football. When you look at how he projects to the NFL, first of all, no way in hell he plays both ways on Sundays. I just don't think we're ever going to see that. Do you think corner is his best spot because of the lack of star power? Or because of the star power at wide receiver, rather, in the NFL, would that be the route that you think he goes?
Yeah. I mean, he's just – plus, I mean, how often do you have lockdown corners? I mean, you have some.
Right.
But you have wide receivers that kind of come and go. He's the kind of player who can play a decade or longer. I think he could do both. But there's no way an NFL GM can
I appreciate you trying to be kind to the kid. Ain't no way in hell. First of all, I don't even think a front office, but I think they'd look at him crazy if he asked to play both sides.
If somebody asked him to play, if somebody in the NFL on a coaching staff or a GM or somebody in the front office says, "Hey, Travis, you should play both ways," Travis is going to look at them like they had two heads. Like, oh.
Right.
I want to stay healthy.
Exactly. And we saw the issues he had last year with durability. One of the big stories I'm looking at going into next year, obviously Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, like all eyes are going to be on that group. But I want to see if he really is the quarterback whisperer that we think that he could be. We saw how he was able to help Michael Penix progress as a passer. If he can get similar results with Jalen Milroe, does he have a chance maybe to be the number one pick next year?
I don't think Jalen can be that guy. I think he can be a very good player at the NFL level, but you know, I think for him, it's almost the same criticism with Shador Sanders too. Like, he held the ball too long. Now, granted, he was rarely getting a clean snap from the centers.
Well,
he also held on the ball too long. But you know, I think with what Kalen DeVore does, you know, he likes to stretch it deep. That's exactly what Jalen Milroe was successful with last year, but they kind of changed offensive systems like three separate times last year because they were trying to figure themselves out at yeah. Alabama. But and Washington also had a ton of studs at receiver. So, I mean, that, you know, the personnel sort of dictated that Washington sure. did that. But I do think that Jalen can be a first-round kind of guy, but we need to see it. We need to see what happens if he gets good offensive line play. Because Alabama's offensive line has been a disaster for like 3 years. So if that improves and he finds a center that can actually snap in the ball, I'd love to see it. I think he's got some talent, and he didn't show it all last year.
So I'll let you go on this, my friend. You've been absolutely awesome. Two-parter for you. One sneaky Heisman contender for you. And then is there a group of five team? Which group of five team, I guess, do you think has the best shot to potentially sneak into this 12-game playoff?
Sneaky Heisman contender. That is a very, very good question. I am going to go with Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah. Back-to-back Tigers?
I don't know how far down he is on Heisman odds, but he should be higher than he probably is. Yeah. And then a group of five team. My default was always SMU, but they're not a group of five team.
right.
I would say probably Memphis.
Just because Tigers gonna be interesting.
That consistently that and the door is open for them to be, you know, the path to getting a group of five bid is there. And I mean, obviously Caden Salter and Liberty. I just want to see Liberty do it again, but I don't sleep on Memphis.
For sure. Yeah. I love their quarterback receiver tandem at Memphis has a chance to be one of the best ones in all of the country on Nussmeier, man. I think look damn good in their bowl game. So we'll see if he's able to carry that into the regular season. Barrett Salee, ladies and gentlemen, appreciate you giving me some time, my man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Barrett, one of the absolute best, talking all things college football. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X at Barrett Salee. That's BarrettSalee. One of the absolute best, talking all things college football. Final hour of power next here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.